And welcome back to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today. Answer any questions you have. In the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls, we have Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite here today. Hey, Joel.
Hey, hey.
How are you today?
I'm fantastic.
Absolutely wonderful. Jeff Litterick joins us on the line from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre, better known as the Bureau. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, y'all.
And we'll have John T. Meyer joining us shortly. We're going to talk some Twitter stuff with John T. when he gets here, and that'll be fantastic. But first, Jeff. There's a couple of security things in the news, and one of them really piqued my interest, and that's the Avalanche takedown. And it's an odd name, but now this was 500,000 infected PCs, and these are just estimates, of course. And then they've been using some language that I wasn't really aware of. 800,000 domain names were either shut down, sinkholed, or blocked. Can you tell me what sinkholing a domain means, just to a layperson?
Let's describe a couple parts of the system. So,
sure, back that up for me.
Yep. The first thing is this is called a botnet, in which the hackers, through many different types of means, have installed a program on all those computers and effectively control those computers for whatever purpose they want to pick. Now, how they control all those machines is that, of course, they can't log into them each individually. Is those infected machines will talk out to what's called the command and control of the botnet.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do by this is look up DNS names and stuff like that to go find their command service. And everyone knows this, so everyone tries to take down the command server, so the hackers need to hide the command servers, make them not easily found and move them around a lot. So they're constantly changing IP addresses. But they also found out, well, if it's just tied to a DNS name, one DNS name, they just take that DNS name down or remove it, then the whole command and control stops working. And while you're still infected, they can't control your machines anymore. So what they've done is called flex domains, where they register thousands, or in this case, 800,000 different domains, and the domain names and IP address of the command and control are changing every single minute, so that even if you discover what it is, it's already too late, and they're using a different IP address and a different domain name for their command and control.
That's a great big shell game.
Right, and they do it because when you really do figure out where all the command and control are and all the domains they're using, that you could do the security researchers could do what they did in Avalanche, and that what they mean by sinkholing or doing is basically blocking those DNS names from resolving to an IP address so that the malware can no longer go and contact any of its command and control servers. And it doesn't matter where the servers are located in the world, in this case, because they're not removing the malware. They're just blocking all the communication of the system so it stops functioning, mm-hmm. Both at the command level and at the client level. So it's always, you know, one-upsman. Every time a big takedown like this happens, the hackers try to put in more defenses to prevent the security researchers from finding all the communication paths and stuff like that. But, yeah, this is a big one, and it's going to help a lot of people out with this one going down.
They had said at one point this particular group of people, it was one of the larger phishing organizations there is in the world, and they said it was responsible for like 2/3 of the activity of the phishing, and that was kind of amazing. The other interesting phrase that I heard here was on these. You mentioned malware, and they said that there's so many families of malware running in this botnet that it's significant. What's a family of malware? Is that just a program that's been modified over time to just, you know, it uses the same base code, but they make little changes to it to hide it?
Yeah, in some cases, there's additional functionality. It's kind of weird to say additional functionality, but they keep adding features to the malware for more control and more things you can do with it. And also, once infected, over time, through the command and control, they will get signals to actually download additional malware and additional modules and upgrade themselves over time. Many of the malware start off pretty simple on your machine, where it basically is just a little little program that will go download more programs, and each of these programs will do something like they will steal your bank information. One will do spam out, right? One will perform DDoS attacks. And it's a whole collection of malware that gets over time installed on your machine so that they can rent. They actually rent the botnet out to different people at times to do functions like phishing or DDoS attacks or to steal your online credentials and stuff like that. So think of it as a suite of software that's actually sold. The people who run the botnet actually buy the software from the developers that develop it. It's a very mature software pipeline, in fact, where you have developers that create this. They sell them to people who create botnets, and then the botnet creators sell them to end users that use them for spam and stuff like that. And it's to kind of isolate people illegally, and also it's really good money to do that. So, but it's a whole suite of family of different little software products, kind of like Microsoft Office. I mean, you gain a word processor and a spreadsheet. These botnets run the same way. They install whatever programs they need to perform those functions at that time on your machine.
Was CryptoLocker or the type of software that goes in and encrypts somebody's hard drive and holds it ransom, is that a part of this as well?
It can be. Usually you don't do that for a botnet because it kind of destroys the use of the machine for anything else. Now, if you suddenly find a botnet inside a big bank or a hospital or something, they may do that. But most of the time, the value in the botnet is renting it out to people to use. And once you encrypt the hard drive, it's not being used for anything else. So, and the user kind of knows. Once the user knows, they can, you know, clean their machine and stuff. So usually botnets want to hide themselves. They want to hide down deep, be silent, and keep using your machine for their purposes as long as possible.
I just mentioned that. I ran across a friend of mine, that had the CryptoLocker thing happen to him this week. So went over and cleaned that up. That was that was an easy fix. It was a reformat and reinstall. But that's a devastating thing. And I actually saw that live in person. So that was interesting for me personally.
One of the things botnets do, though, is deliver a lot of the ransomware to hide the sources and stuff. Those ransomware people, they buy the program from someone who develops it. Then they rent a botnet to actually try to find vulnerabilities in machines and actually install the ransomware on it. So the botnets are played as part, kind of as the installer and distribution layer of the ransomware. Like I said, the botnets are open for rent, and you can, once you pay the guy the money, you can use them for basically whatever function you want.
And this may seem like a really stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Are ISPs like my ISP is Medco, but there are others like US West and all the DSL providers and all that. Can it ever get to the point where the provider can sort of say, hey, you know, the signatures coming out of this or the traffic coming out of these computers in this person's home looks like it's a botnet or is behaving like a botnet, or you could identify it as a botnet, and just basically shut that service down and inform the person? And so when's that going to happen?
Well, it already does. At the state, we watch and we get a list from the FBI and from other sources and security resources, a list of all known common command and control networks, right? So we actually watch, our IDSs watch for any communication to any kind of known command and control network. The problem comes in is the hackers are pretty smart about this. They encrypt their communications. They do little bits of communications. When we talk about a DDoS of like 40 gigabits, each individual machine, like on Midco, is maybe only doing a meg. It looks like normal traffic, and it's all encrypted, so there's no real patterns necessarily to it, right? Some are easier to see than others, but the hackers are constantly improving their game to hide this because they want to keep the botnet undetected as long as possible. But once detected, like the Avalanche, we'll get now an update nightly automatically of all those domains and stuff so that we can go back and we'll go through our logs and see if anyone was ever communicating with any of those domains and command and control servers, and then go investigate stuff. We do that very regularly. But you know, they have to be known first. And that's really the security research. Microsoft and Google have been really good at this. And hunting these out and finding those command and control networks and how they communicate so that they can tell us what to look for. But it's always an arms race.
Yeah, it's cat and mouse, really. Mm-hmm. And you know, you say it makes sense. You don't want to go do something that raises a big red flag. You know, you want to keep it down the down low, I guess, or whatever, and make it look like regular traffic. That's fascinating. But we'll certainly have to follow up on this on later shows. I want to remind folks, if you'd like to get a hold of us today, of course, facebook.com/techradio. I put a link on there for some holiday music, some Christmas music. There's everything from, I guess, Justin Bieber to Motown available. It's all free today only from Microsoft. Go get yourself some holiday music today. That's a good benefit of joining that page. But you can also drop us a line. That's a direct communication to us at facebook.com/techradio. Another great way, send us a text, 368-1NPR or 368-1677, of course, in the 605 area code. Drop us a text if you have a quick question or a comment today. We're fielding all calls. We're going to talk about some holiday gifts here, some Christmas presents later in the show as we move through today's show. John T. Meyer from Lemonly joins us. Hey, John.
Howdy. Sorry, yeah. I'm a little late.
Yeah, that's all right. We had some business to take care of.
I had a meeting go along, and then I was a little distracted. I was on the way out, and my team, I was in a meeting this morning, was telling me about the breaking news in downtown Sioux Falls.
Yeah, the building collapse. Yeah,
yeah, scary stuff. But
we're live. Keely Baltina was live on the scene.
Is she down there?
Yeah, that's a great little live news piece at the top of the
hour. Yeah, seen a lot of the media, local media, jump on Facebook Live, which is great to see a good application of that.
Did you see me last night?
I did not.
Oh, man. First time ever I used Facebook Live on my personal page.
What were you doing?
There was a house fire block down from me.
Okay.
The whole neighborhood was full of smoke. And,
well, that's actually news that it wasn't just
yeah,
you,
it was actually
eating a sandwich.
I'll reserve my first ever Facebook Live feed for actually something worth broadcasting.
I think when it first, the day it came out, I was probably me just staring in the camera and being like, how do I use this thing? Probably not worth watching.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a very good newsman last night. I mean, I shot it until my hands got cold and I went home and ate supper.
I mean, I think there's a lot of follow what everyone else is doing maybe in some of the local media, but at the same time I was glad to see the local brands use the tool exactly what it's meant for. You know, unfortunate news for Sioux Falls, but good coverage, and it seems like people were jumping on it pretty quick.
Yeah, we did a little experimentation with during the football championships with actually, you know, because we live stream, but
yep.
But we tried a little Facebook Living, and
yeah.
And I made an attempt to do the Christmas tree lighting ceremony live.
How was your connection and bandwidth down in the dome? And was there, I mean, I always think when they're in larger crowds, a lot of people with phones, it sometimes bogs down, but
yeah, that was my problem at the Capitol building for the Christmas tree lighting.
Okay.
But in Vermilion, we got plenty of the bandwidth. So we were good to go there. Yeah. No. Anyhow, I did want to talk to you about Twitter today.
Yeah, what do you got?
Well, we haven't spoken since they got rid of Vine, I don't think.
Or they, I don't think
they
so,
announced
no.
that Vine was kind of going away.
Shut it down, yep.
So a lot of people declared that as the end of Twitter, which I felt was maybe a little bit premature of a prediction.
Sure.
Did you ride that wave and then come back to reality, or were you okay with that?
I'm still very pro Twitter. I feel like it's made itself in so deeply into our culture and the way you still watch. We have CNN here on in the studio, and you'll still see them flash their Twitter sign and say, you know, I think anytime you have a live event last night you could watch the Vikings game streamed on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, this Sunday is the first time they're going to start doing Sunday games. But I think of the Oscars or these Super Bowl, these live events that people gather around. The election or the debates, Twitter is gold, both in terms of breaking news, but also in comedy and in depth. I think on a day-to-day basis, it has become a little bit of an echo chamber of people just pushing links. Here's our new blog post. Here's my article. And so you really have to personally curate and edit your Twitter to find the value for you individually. Now, the Vine thing, I think it's a startup. I think you maybe can't call Twitter a startup now. They're a publicly traded company, but they're cleaning out any waste. They're really focusing on their core product. I mean, I think it's probably the right move. It's funny when those things happen and they announce that it's going. Now all of a sudden people are like, "Oh, I love Vine. I miss Vine. I don't want it to leave." And it's like, "Well, you didn't use it, and that's why they're getting rid of it, because people weren't really using it."
Right.
And I think Vine ultimately actually hit on some really good trends, but what happened is that Snapchat came along and I think really took those features and that audience. So a lot of the people that kind of were born as Vine stars are now morphing into Snapchat stars. And then we just talked about Facebook Live. I mean, they added that live feature and really kind of trump even Periscope, which was a big acquisition that Twitter made. So,
well, and their latest, Yes.
Yeah, yesterday, right? Yeah, I don't know about that.
Used Yes?
No, I have not, but I saw that announcement.
Yeah, and then they bought it and then immediately made their president, their CEO, their product chief. They got not only a software company, but they got the dude that they wanted to get.
Lots of times those are talent acquisitions where they really just want the people.
Yeah.
I know Adam Bain was the product guy, I think, before, I believe, and he left the company recently. So, yeah, there's a few of those maybe potential scary signs, like closing a product, some key executives leaving the company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was the rumors that everyone from Disney to Salesforce was going to acquire Twitter. I do own a few shares in Twitter, not many. I would say I'm losing money. The shares are down. I don't know. I think it's still built its way into culture enough. I know you were nodding your head when I said that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Twitter could ever not exist. I think media would just, I don't know what media would do if it wasn't for Twitter. I think the problem with Twitter from the investor standpoint is it's a lot like Wikipedia. It's really hard to monetize and still make it be Twitter. You know, it's not like Facebook in the way that, you know, Twitter's such a small, tight app, mm-hmm. which is the reason people, you know, I mean, prefer it certainly in media.
Yeah, and how it got its start in, you know, the Middle East and people where you didn't even need a smartphone. You could just have SMS and you could use Twitter.
Yeah, and the footprint is just so much nicer in that way, especially for media and, you know, if anything, Donald Trump will keep Twitter afloat just by himself. But I think monetizing it's been the problem for Twitter, and you know, I think they'll figure it out eventually. I think maybe, you know, I hate to say it, but I think most investors are probably too quick to try and get that company to turn a profit. But it's just too integral to not exist.
I think a great acquisition actually would be Facebook. And so I think that, you know, there's a lot of headlines and clickbait with Disney and Salesforce and all these people who are supposedly interested in acquiring Twitter. But Mark Zuckerberg and the Facebook team have found a good way to turn profit.
An acquisitor? You think they
What did
should?
I say?
Well, I just – good acquisition. Twitter will not buy Facebook. The
no,
other way
true,
around.
Yeah. Other way, a buyer, a potential buyer could be Facebook.
Yeah, right, for sure.
I mean, they've successfully integrated Instagram into their product and made money. WhatsApp, they've integrated and they started to make money. You know, I think like Oculus, the VR thing is still a little ways down the road.
Well, I think if Facebook was able, I mean, there'd be a lot of people angry, but if Facebook was able to acquire Twitter, I don't think they'd have to turn a profit with it.
I'm not saying that all of a sudden tweets are going to be in your Facebook feed. I think it stands alone as mm-hmm. Twitter, but Facebook has proven the smartest to take data and then make money off of it.
For sure.
Yeah, that's going to be...
And so, you know, if you think of what Facebook could do, they already know my age, they know my demographics, they know what I like and dislike, they know where I live, you know, all that data. But now they're going to they could add this kind of qualitative layer of, like, the things that I talk about and the topic. Because, you know, maybe some people are more... I tweet more than I Facebook post, right? And so there's more content and even more data there.
Yeah, I was doing some reading. They actually take your IP and compare that to what you watch on Netflix.
Oh,
or
really?
What Netflix puts out for IP addresses for what you're doing. And
they know
what you're watching.
Not you specifically.
Well,
no, not really. Just the way it's set up, they could know that, but they aggregate the data so they know that the person that is in this area watches this thing. They don't know that it's you watching this thing. They specifically say they don't do that. Now, you can be a conspiracy theorist and say that they really do care what you're watching, Kent, but they don't. They just care what you and other people like you are watching. They want to target you specifically with ads, but they don't want to target you specifically with ads, if you follow my
Speaking of Netflix, how about the new feature? I think was it yesterday or 2 days ago they announced that people have been dying for years. They now have like an offline mode.
Yeah, you can download all of the content.
I don't quite know how it works yet. Is it, like if it's on my iPad, does it go on my device?
No,
or is it in
the app? It goes on your device, and it's only mobile devices.
Right.
It's only iOS and Android devices. You can't do it on a computer. I think the logical reason they would do that is if you could do it on your computer, you could essentially download everything on Netflix and just turn off
the
service.
Because that was the first thing my wife said, like, whose phone is always full of pictures. She's like, well, I don't have space for it.
That's exactly right. That's
but it's great if you're going on a plane or on road trip. You can download a couple movies and then have them right there.
Yeah, well, that's going to totally cut into movie sales and from places like iTunes and Vudu and all of those.
I'll be on a flight and I'll see a guy or a girl up, you know, a kind of kitty corner, and I'm kind of watching their movie over their shoulder on their iPad, and I'm always like, I don't think about it enough, like when I'm at the airport gate, to be like, I'm going to download a movie quick on iTunes. Usually the internet's not fast enough.
There's no such thing as quick
exactly.
When downloading a movie on iTunes in an airport.
And so with Netflix, hopefully that would be smooth and actually make sense. Yeah. Now it's going to still take me a half hour to decide what to watch.
You know, Netflix has really good compression, and you know, when you buy a movie on iTunes or any of the other vendors, you buy like, you know, the HD quality. Even the regular quality one is still very optimized and a large file. Now with Netflix, I haven't tried this, but this is my assumption, is they will have their really good Netflix compression, so the file you get will actually probably be pretty small in comparison to if you purchase the movie outright.
I've never successfully downloaded a movie from iTunes onto my iPad. Like, so for example, I was on business travel and I was like, yeah, you know, I got a meeting tomorrow. I might just like I'm just sitting here in a hotel room. I have a 1-year-old, like I never watch movies anymore. I was like, I'm gonna watch a movie. So I start to download it and it says it should be done in about 3.5 hours. So I'll like go to dinner and come back and then download fail. But then I get charged the $5. So there's a button that you can complain and they're always really great and they refund me. But I'm like, we're talking about maybe 4 attempts.
Yeah, that's usually
four failed attempts.
That's usually
zero.
A function of the
internet quality
of
the
where
hotel.
Hotels don't like you to download 4 gigs, 5 gigs at a time.
But the point being, like, you really have to plan ahead if you're going to watch an iTunes
movie.
Or
you know, you can set it up to download offline. This is what we do with my daughter. You know, if there's some movies or something that she watches, you know, when we purchase them or whatever, we'll just go ahead and select them to download, and then they'll just kind of download over time. So yes, it does require some planning ahead because the files are so large. And
sure,
you know, I think there's still going to be a little of that with Netflix because it's still going to be, even if it's compressed really, really well, it's still going to be large file sizes.
Yeah, let's see, when iPhone 7, when did it come out? September, right?
September, yeah, 20 something.
So about three-ish months into my iPhone 7, the best decision I did was to get the
larger one,
128 gig.
Yeah. The larger storage. Yeah.
There's like a 256 now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially, yeah. And when you have a 1-year-old, you just start filling up with photos.
Totally.
I went out and bought a 256 gig chip for my Samsung before my son's wedding this summer. Because I wanted to be able to, if I wanted to shoot lots of photos and lots of videos, I did not want to run out of space on my phone. So,
is the Samsung, you have the Galaxy, like the one you can't take on planes, or
no, you can't.
No,
this
is the S7. This is the cool one. This one doesn't blow up on me.
How crazy was that? I've been doing a little bit of travel, like a decent amount of travel this fall, and they keep announcing like if you have this phone, you have to set it there.
The note
at the gate.
Yeah, the note. Yeah.
Oh man.
Well, let's talk to Amos about that when he's on the show next time because he's living that dream.
I wonder if he still has it. You know, that was the last time we talked to him.
He did say he traded it in, and I couldn't believe that.
Did he?
I thought he'd stick it out and buy the bag that, you know. Anyway, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're gonna talk more about this storage thing, and lots of other things, like maybe some holiday giving as well. You can get a hold of us. Our number is 800-524-3604. Don't be shy. At KentSDPB, speaking of Twitter, shoot us a tweet, at KentSDPB. The email address, midday@sdpb.org. If you want to send us a text, 3681NPR or 3681677. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to Tech Radio here on Dakota Midday. We're on a couple more Fridays in December. We're gonna cover the 16th and the 30th. So we're still gonna talk about holiday buying in a couple of weeks, and then
and holiday returning.
We're gonna talk about how that's working out for you after Christmas, or how to make it work on the 30th. So
Uncle Bill got you a Samsung Galaxy Note. What do you do?
Knowing me, I'd plug it in and start using it. I don't know. We'll see. It's probably not going to happen, though. Want to, again, remind folks, get a hold of us on the show here today. 800-524-3604 is the number to call. Sometimes I say that a little fast, so I'll just repeat it. 800-524-3604 at Kent SDPB is the Twitter handle, and the email address midday@sdpb.org. Send us a text, 3681NPR or 3681677, and you can make a comment about something you've heard on the show already, or ask us to comment on something, or ask a question. We are here for you today. We have Joel Brovelite. He's our Mac guru. John T. Meyer from Lemonly is here, and, of course, Jeff Litterick from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre. Jeff will be up in Pierre next week, hopefully drop by and see you. We'll be SDPBs in town for the governor's budget address. Of course, we'll have that live on television, live on radio, and live on the web, and archived as well. So interesting budget year. We'll have to see what the proposals are for the year, and we'll do that on Tuesday. So that'll be some good things. We talked about the schedule. We talked about what's coming up. You were saying something about how long it takes to download movies. Mm-hmm. Off the internet. And what struck me was there was a news story I read this week from Amazon. They have this vehicle they're calling, it's weirdly named, and it's weird because there's avalanche, but it's called Snowmobile. And it's a semi-truck. And it's actually several semi-trucks. But they're basically, the payload is just a giant hard drive.
The petabyte.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah.
And the thing is they've had this service where if you're a business and you've got a lot of data to upload to the web,
okay,
they've got a service you can ship them a hard drive and they'll do it for you because it takes so long over connections. Well, this semi-truck will actually roll out to your location and, you know, slurp up all your data, and it's actually a faster way to get it on the net than even...
Why does it have to be a semi-truck?
Because that's how big. That's how big.
Size of the
that's how big. The
data.
The
data. It's basically a data
like
center.
It's basically like a hard drive full
of
racks.
Outside your house. Is that the idea?
Or your business? Yeah.
Like a mobile.
Yeah. It wouldn't be your house. That would be impressive if you had that much data in your house.
Hey, I take a lot of photos.
It's mostly for like enterprise. Like, say, for instance, I'm just throwing this out. I have no idea if this is what it'd be, but like Discover has all their, you know, all of their data, and they want to upload it to a new center or something like that. And of course, they would use a web service like Amazon Web Services, which is what we're talking about here. Rather than upload that file across the internet, of course, it would take a long time, but more importantly, it's not quite as safe as physically trucking that over on a vehicle. So a petabyte, which is what this semi truck holds, is 124 terabytes, or, you know, slightly over a million gigabytes.
Yeah, that's cool.
Seems like a lot.
It's a lot of iPhones.
That almost holds my CD collection. No, actually, it holds like the entire internet, like 45 times over or something like that.
You have a CD collection?
Well, yeah, I used to. Now it's all on hard drive. I know, I'm one of those weird people. I can't give it up.
When my daughter was born, we took some like newborn photos, and the photographer gave us a CD, like a DVD, I should say, with the photos. And we have no DVD drive in our house. Like, both my wife and I have two relatively new MacBooks, don't have a drive. We couldn't, so we had to ask for a USB because we literally could not access the photos. Like that scene in like Zoolander when they're like, the files are in the computer.
Yeah, I haven't physically bought a CD, you know, in a very long time, but, you know, I've got one foot firmly planted in the streaming thing. I mean, I've used Pandora as late as today. By the way, they're looking to get sold, and they're okay with that.
Sure.
Who was that was going to grab those up?
I have no idea.
Anyway, Pandora, I was listening to them today. I do listen to Spotify. I use any streaming service. I mean, I'm okay. I use Amazon's because I pay for it already. It's great. I use everything. But I've got this massive amount of data that I started collecting back in the 80s or 90s or whatever, and it's just this curated group of bands that, you know, they're my songs, darn it, and I'm going to have them on a hard drive, and I'm going to listen to them when I want to, and it's
the service or product that I want or that needs to exist, or maybe it does, and Joel can tell me if it does exist, is some sort of like matching, or like I think of the card game Memory when you were a kid and you flip over the cards and it's like, oh, those are copies. Like I want to be able to connect that one external hard drive to that laptop I had in college, to the current laptop I'm using, to my desktop. They all come together and they say, oh, wait, you already have copies of that, so we're going to get rid of that one and match this one and put these together. Because I think of we went through that process, that period where we all were ingrained backup, backup, backup. And so we all have done a good job of backing up.
Yeah.
But now, like, my photos from college or the things, you know, from 10 years are just sitting on some. I'm never going to look at them. Like, it sounds more like, are my grandkids going to find it someday and then be like, oh, are we supposed to go through these files? Because, like,
what
grandpa
is the,
has
what is this thing?
Box? Like,
why is it so heavy?
We did the good. We've learned how to back up, and now
is
we
just a record
don't
player?
Use it. And I know there are some people who spend time to really organize, but
you know,
I think
it's not
average of us.
If what you're worried about is photos, it's not too hard to go ahead.
That's
and
an example.
Just, yeah. I mean, that is always the number one thing people say. You know, I've got photos and videos that I want to make sure I have. The newest version of photo for both the desktop and iOS. If you upload, if you just, you know, hook up an external hard drive, whatever it is, another computer, and you drop all those photos in from the photo folder, it will tell you what is a duplicate and what is not.
Okay.
And you can, with one check, say, you know, import all duplicates.
Merge, or replace.
The only issue is if for some reason you have a duplicate, but it's a different resolution, or maybe you edit it a little bit, it would bring those in as well. So, like, you might have like seven versions of this as a photo in different sizes. It will bring all seven of those in. It won't combine that into one photo. But the Photos app does that really easily. So that's certainly one way to fix what you're talking
about.
Like,
I almost think what's happened is a lot of us, you know, I think people are starting to come back a little bit on physical stuff. And they're like, I don't want to live with so much stuff. Like, I want to get rid of, you know, I have Craigslist or I do a garage sale, or they may be minimizing some of the physical stuff in their life. And I feel like we've almost created digital waste, right? And it doesn't feel like it because we don't see it, but I think of, like, I saved these papers that I wrote because I thought, like, someday I would need it, but I don't need that, and now it exists in some external hard drive or photos or videos or music, and it doesn't feel like waste because we don't see it, but it kind of, I think of it as waste because it just lives there and you don't need it.
Yeah, I mean, I would encourage you to back all of those hard drives up to a newer drive.
Do you go to the cloud or do you do both?
Like, at the very least Dropbox. To a newer drive, but then you could, the problem is if you're talking about multiple computers, you definitely maybe don't want to upload, you know, 500 gigabytes or more to the cloud.
Sure.
But if you put it on an external drive or two, you know, it's not expensive, and then it's on a newer device. So, you know, you might have a 10-year-old computer that's got data on it. But hard to tell how long that's going to function. So I would highly recommend anybody in that situation back that up to a newer device.
I mean, I'll ask Jeff, but I feel like if I'm Mac doctors or Mac pros or, I mean, maybe not the Geek Squad, but an entrepreneur, like, I think that's a business service.
Oh, they do
there.
That, yeah. For like, absolutely, all those places you mentioned will do exactly what you're talking about. And there are some software to kind of match files, whether Excel files or music files or whatever. There's software that will do that for you with, I would say, an amount of success.
Sure.
But I doubt there's anything perfect for every one person. It doesn't take long to pile up a bunch of data as you're talking about. But, at the first step I would recommend is definitely get it all on one thing. And, you know, the older the computer, the easier that is because it's such a small storage. You know, I recently found my old laptop, my first Mac laptop ever, with a 40 megabyte hard drive. I fired it up and it worked. And I was like, I don't have this data. So I just, like, downloaded it.
We're moving, and I found my 04 MacBook Pro, the very first one I had. And it's like a little brick. And my wife was like, do you still want that? I'm like, yeah, this thing is, like, besides, I don't even know what data is on there because I'm not even going to boot it up and check. But it's like a just like a memories in there.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
I have like stickers on it and
time capsule.
Exactly.
Yeah, I just got rid of a bunch of DVDs and CDs out of my basement the other day. I'm kind of cleaning house a little bit, and I ran across, you know, like Microsoft Office, you know, 98 and, you know, 98 Essentials and all this other, and all these other floppies and drives and stuff. You're right. I have a lot of digital waste. I really do. But I've tried to keep it backed up. I buy a new, you know, almost every Black Friday I go out and buy the biggest, you know, Western Digital or, you know, whatever back, you know, notebook or whatever thing, you know, large hard drive there is, and try to back my stuff up, because you just never know. And little known service of Amazon, if you're a Prime member, you can back up all your photos for free.
Yes, so they will. Yep.
That's unlimited. So, you know, you're not as old as I am. You can't possibly have as many photos as I do.
I'm not a photographer either.
You could probably do that pretty easily, a lot more easier than I can. But that's, again, that's a set it and forget it thing.
Let it
go and set it overnight or whatever and let it back up for you. But it's, I was just reminded again this week when I went over to that guy's house, and there's the crypto locker thing saying, you know, $300 US and you can have your computer back. And I thought, man, I mean, that'd be if all my kids' photos were on there and that's the only place they were, I'd be shelling out the $300. But because they're not, wipe it and start over kind of a thing. So you'd really got to.
Well, not to like belabor the point, but I think a lot about like what are we leaving for generations behind, or like a future. Like, so in my home that I grew up, my childhood home, my parents have a big cabinet or like almost like a trunk, I guess is the right word, full of photos and letters and cards from my grandparents, and like this cool stuff that you can pull out and touch and see and feel, which from a space side is it's heavy and it's cumbersome and it's large. But then on the flip side, you know, are my grandkids ever going to be like, let's open up Grandpa's old hard drive and look at some of his photos when he was a kid? Like, it's not going to happen.
I've heard that argument several times. And first off, what I'd tell you is your grandpa's photos, it had, you know, nine.
Sure.
You know, you take nine photos over lunch. So, sure. And really, I mean, if you're the average person, you're going to get some photos printed. You know, you might have, you know, some in a frame,
sure,
and some over. That's really just the same number of photos that you're talking about there. You're not gonna throw the physical ones away, probably, especially if your kid or your family, sure, or whatever. So,
we definitely create more as a society.
In comparison to the amount of data you have and the amount of data that's saved, sure, that's not even comparable. But the really important stuff, we still kind of have physical copies of it, or at the very least, you can have physical copies of it, and that's what I would recommend. You know, don't, you know, I think people take so many photos these days, and they go, I must have every one, and I'm going to print them out because it's so important. You know, it's just not that important. Just print out a few that are important to you, maybe print out once every year or something.
Sure.
You get your kids' photos from school, whatever, you still have those. Don't sweat all of this incredible amount of data, especially if you're taking videos and all that. You know, who has time for
that? A good application I'd recommend, I just did this for my daughter's birthday, is a web product called Chatbook. So if you use Instagram or Facebook and put your photos in either one of those platforms, you can go to chatbooks, I think, .com is the URL, and you log in, you sync your, or not even sync, you like allow access to your account. And I set a timeline for the 365 days of her life, and just any of the photos that I had with a hashtag for her, I made a book. And so then it came in the mail, and it's just this little photo book. Because otherwise, see, I don't remember to print them, and so they don't feel that, they're not that special when they're just on some drive.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's so many.
Yeah, that's the feature I want on photos from Apple in the future as a non-photographer. Like, I probably took 30 photos of my daughter with her cake, you know, last week for her birthday. And I keep talking about her birthday because it's fresh in my mind. But
for sure,
can it just sync it and give me the one good one? Like, when can the computer and the machine tell me this was the best one you took?
It won't be long. I mean, the software and the hardware are already there. It's just a matter of building that feature.
Like on this one, she blinked or her eyes are closed.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
One, this person's, you know, that's, not
it
looking.
Knows that. And it knows if it's a little blurry. It knows if it's a little out of focus. Yeah, and it knows the better ones, absolutely. I tell you what, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk a little gifting for this month, and let's see what we've all bought already and what we're thinking about buying. But we need to take a quick break before that. And welcome back to Dakota Middays Tech Radio, our first of third for the month. And it's a big month, I guess, economically. We've had Black Friday just a short time ago, which is, you know, the name Black Friday became from, that was the day traditionally retailers started.
Nope, that's not what it's from.
The black,
there is,
no,
a,
really?
There
that
is
not
older,
what it means.
Yep.
What?
Yeah, it actually refers
I'm
to,
being lied to?
Philadelphia. That day, there was so much traffic that the exhaust from the vehicles would cause the sky to be black. So that's why it was called Black
Friday.
I've
heard that too, yeah.
It must have been back in the 70s or something.
Oh, then. No. Back in the
is that on NPR?
40s or 30s.
I think
really?
I heard that.
I don't remember where I think I read it, but it doesn't have anything to do with the
with,
companies
with
going in the black.
Economics and
nothing
and
at
making
all.
Making money. And
I mean, it.
Do you feel like it's
ancillarily? It
I mean, I've never been a Black Friday shopper pre-internet. Internet, either one, but it seems like it feels like it's starting to swing back a little bit, like the madness or like the you know, midnight, the 2 a.m., the trample. I don't know. I feel like I didn't see as much. I feel like it cooled
off. Well, now
a little
bit. Think it changed because now so many places open Thanksgiving Day.
They pushed those sales back,
yeah.
Thanksgiving.
That it's like it's not as.
It's just stretched out.
Yeah.
Because then you have Cyber Monday.
And I think those companies wisely. Spread it out their deals and when they start just so that they don't have 1,000 people in line and then 100 products and then people are, you know, mad or whatever.
Well, and then you saw the marketing strategy and I think it was well-intentioned, but it was also marketing of the companies that say, we're not going to do deals on Black Friday, right? Or are
sure.
not even going to be open. And
the
then they end up doing
marketing.
Like more sales.
Right, for sure. That's a good strategy too.
I actually did go out on
Thanksgiving and I got a couple of things and my wife ordered something online for our daughter who's not listening. So, so she won't know that. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely picked up a few things. There
like
are some crazy prices.
Or?
Yeah, definitely. Because
so then people have to work on Thanksgiving.
I can't tell you because my wife might be listening.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can get good deals on then. But, this is the first year that online sales have eclipsed completely offline sales. So, you know, there are a lot of online Black Friday deals. I don't know if anybody, either of you looked at the TVs that were available from Best Buy or Target.
Nope.
Just crazy, you know, 80-inch TVs for under $1,000. I was just like, it blows my mind every time.
Yep. 55, 60-inch 4Ks for less than
$400.
Yeah, less than $400. Less than $300.
Yeah, amazing.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I know. See?
I was like, sheesh, mine's not 4K.
Right, I know. And yours probably isn't 80-inch.
No.
Yeah, there you go.
Not yet.
Probably 42 or something.
Yeah. I keep thinking one of these years is going to be the last year for TVs and we're going to have something else, but it keeps getting pushed back. So, you know, eventually.
Well, remember, we used to sit on the show and think that, like, Apple is going to make a TV. I feel like that's not happening now.
No, I don't think for several years that Apple thought that that was a marketable plan.
You think they did or didn't?
I don't. I think they saw the writing and was like, that's too cutthroat of business.
Sure.
You know, we can just let everybody build TVs and connect to those, and that's there's no money in TVs. There still is no money in TVs. So
that's hey Jeff, did you make it out or did you do some?
He did
some shopping.
Yeah, you got a watch, didn't you, Jeff?
Are you into wearables now, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm back here, so a little bit of a call mishap, but Black Friday and. To this day, if you notice, there's a lot more of the smart watches and stuff being sold, and I got a pretty good deal on one, and I'm really enjoying it. Now, mine can pair with either Apple or Android devices. I have it paired with my Android phone, it is very nice. I got $100 off on it, so it was kind of a steal at the $170 price, but I'm super enjoying it.
What's your favorite thing about it? What is it, and what's your favorite thing about it?
Well, there's a few things. The whole smartphone integration, especially in Android, is very nice because I can turn notifications on and off. So when a call comes in, I can answer it from the phone. When I get emails, when my home security system sees a noise or stuff, I will get an alert on my phone, and then can if I care about, you know, actually on my watch, I should say. I get the alert on the watch, and then I can go look at the phone. I can read the first part of text messages and emails on my watch without having to get the phone out. I can see the weather. It is also a fitness one, so it does a lot of GPS navigation even without the phone. I can save locations, and it has built-in compasses and stuff. It records your heart rate, how much calories you're doing. It even includes your sleep patterns. If you wear it at night, it tells you when you're in a deep sleep and when you're in light sleep, so you can actually review how long you slept and at what levels you slept the next day once you sync it with the phone. So just about every feature on it, I've used it, and I enjoy it quite a bit. My old watch was getting long in the tooth, and this deal came along, and I'll probably never go back to a non-smartwatch after just 1 week of wearing this watch. So
wow.
I'm a
big
watch
fan.
Person, but it makes the whole, you know, experience so much nicer with that pairing with the phone.
Yeah, I think this is the year of the smartwatch for sales. You know, now you can get an Apple Watch, you know, under $200 for a new product. Yes, $180
used.
You were able to on Black Friday. No, on Black Friday,
oh, okay.
$180. I assume there are still going to the real trick with Black Friday is if you didn't get it that day, all you have to do is wait, you know, 3 weeks right before Christmas or right after Christmas, you'll get it at the same price. So yeah, I mean, and not just Apple, of course, all the Android wearables and the fitness trackers. This is definitely the year of the wrist-worn computer device.
And I would say I got my Apple Watch a year ago for Christmas, mm-hmm. and I've actually, if you check my Twitter at John T. Meyer. Just last night I tweeted, is there a secondary market for an Apple Watch? Because I just feel like I don't love mine that much. It doesn't like make enough of a difference for it to be a $280 watch. Like, what I really like that new Nike one that's like the workout running one.
Mm-hmm.
And I want that to be like a $99 fitness kind of watch. I don't need all the bells and whistles of the full watch. I wish that they would have separated that as like a product.
Yeah, although I saw you checking like two things just since you've been sitting
That's
here.
That's why I don't
watch.
Like it, right? I check it too much.
Oh, I see.
I need to control my notifications.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, you can turn those off.
I know. It's customizing.
It can just
tech.
Be a watch.
Okay, so wearables was kind of predicted to be the big thing,
yeah.
I guess. What are some other things you're like checking out? I know I've been pricing those, you know, there's been the little basically the battery packs that you can haul with you in your backpack or whatever that recharge your phone.
Mm-hmm.
But now they make like mega size ones of these that you can like jumpstart your car with.
Yeah.
And so I've been kind of looking into those. I think those are kind of cool. But
seen a lot of like drone stuff. I don't know if like I still don't get like the personal use. Drone to me feels like a toy you play
it's,
with
it's
on
a
Christmas.
Toy.
And
Absolutely
then like a week
a
later it sits on the shelf for
I,
the rest
I'd
of the
agree
year.
With that.
But
I would have had a drone in the air last night for that fire if I had one.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Sure.
That would have been fun.
So how often do you have a fire in your neighborhood?
Well, all right. But, I mean, you know, I'd use it more than just for house fires, honestly.
One of the things I noticed this year, because they've been actually selling out, is a lot of home automation stuff also that's networked. Amazon actually sold out of some of this stuff, which is almost unheard of. They're back in stock now, but with the new Echoes and the Google, though I haven't heard as much on the Google side, but a lot of that home automation stuff seems to be selling very well this year, too.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that, a lot of commercials. What's the difference? I don't even know. I should know this, but the Echo, the tall one, and then the little, like, the Dot. Is that just extension?
The Dot is just basically the same thing without the really heavy, you know, good quality speaker built in. So I mean, it does have a speaker and does work fine, but if you can plug it or pair it with a speaker or plug it into a
so like
set of speakers.
We've had a Sonos for a couple of years because I don't think I would listen to.
You could pair it with that.
But like I wouldn't need the Echo then. You could just have the Dot if you're not going to listen to music.
Absolutely. In fact, I highly recommend it. I this is not an Apple product, but the Amazon Echo all versions are just fantastic.
Yeah,
I have them in three or four rooms, and I use them probably more than I use
anything.
And
you connect, like, I know you're a big, like, Philips Hue light bulb.
Yeah, everyone's
Nest.
Connected. Yeah, like, I'm pretty sure my daughter doesn't know how to use light switches.
I see Google's got their version out now for Christmas as well.
Yeah, what's it, Google Home or what's it
called? Google Home.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So I'm going to be interested to see some reviews.
Which validates
that
that's a market if all the big brands are starting to get into it.
It certainly seems to be a hands-free convenience.
Absolutely.
That's the way they're marketing it. But as we hear the music begin, I will just say that we'll talk about more products on the 16th.